session number 31509, Reel 15.
Would the Pathans have been the group the Taliban sprang from?
Well, in a sense, yes, but there was no Taliban in those days.
But that's Pathans, the ethnic group,
I like Pathans. They're very like us in many ways. They have the same kind of sense of humor. For example, if somebody slips up on a banana skin, and even if they hurt themselves, they roar with laughter. They think it's very, very funny. Whereas an Indian, if he sees the same thing happen, he'll be full of concern and come up very worried, and he won't think it's at all funny. Their sense of humor is utterly different. And
but they would be the ethnic group, would they? That the
there was no ethnic group. I mean, they Pathans. To understand Pathans is extremely difficult. They are brigands at heart. They're always they have blood feuds, as they do in Eastern Europe. The troubles in the Balkans were very much like the troubles we had in Pakistan. Villages would be against villages. If somebody was killed, there was a life feud that went on for generations. Village would be against village. When they weren't fighting against a common foe, they'd be fighting against each other. They'd like scrapping, and they had a Pakhtunwali code. If somebody went to, they could be your enemies, but if you asked for their protection and you went there, they were under a code obliged to look after you whilst you were asked for help and protection from them. I won't go into all that. It's a very involved thing. They're difficult people to understand in that respect. They don't see things the way we see them. But at the same time, they're very basic. The present trouble in which the Taliban have formed to deal with is partly the problem of the production of heroin that comes from the poppies that they grow. Poppies grow extremely well in that very arid soil, which grows practically nothing else, and it's very profitable because it costs very little to grow, and the profit on the poppies that grow runs into millions. There are a lot of people on the way, but between growing Afghanistan and it being sold on the streets in London or other big capitals, cities. But nevertheless, their share is enormous. And they say, quite frankly, if you can find something else for us to grow, we can make the same kind of money, we won't grow any more poppies.
And you think this has been vital for the development of the Taliban, do you, as well as the...
Well, the Taliban, I don't know very much about the Taliban other than what I read in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. They are predominantly a religious group. they're very strongly Islamic. They believe that if you kill a non-believer, somebody who's not the only believers, they think, are people who follow Islam. If you kill a non-believer, you automatically go to hell, and all your crimes are forgiven. This is the simple Pathan. He's very simple, clever and cunning, but very simple-minded.
Yes.
His mold, their mold is that the religious teachers work on the young, and they believe what they're told, because the lying mold, in my words, in brackets, lying, would never tell an untruth to a believer. It's an impossible situation, really.
Yes. It's interesting because of the events today.
Yes.
And you experienced this, you know, before really the Taliban as such existed, and yet they obviously sprang from this group, didn't they, the Pathan?
Well,
yes,
they do. But a lot of Pakistanis have joined according to the newspapers, and I believe that have joined the Taliban. They're another expression for the Taliban is they're freedom fighters.
Yes, I suppose really one has to consider the various wars, you know, first of all the Russian incursion, and then of course, you know, the American after that. But it's very interesting, you know, hearing about life. I suppose these dams are still there today.
Oh yes, the Wartek Dam was the first one. We had no sooner finished that than the next one was had already been designed and drawn up, but it didn't start for a year and a half or so after the completion of the Wartek Dam because the rivers had their sources in India or in Indian territory miles and miles away, some miles east of behind Everest and places like that. They flew west and then they came down through the mountains into Pakistan, and then they came out of Pakistan and went through India again. And off these rivers, of course, the British, before all this happened, had combed the Punjab with canals for irrigation purposes. One of the great things that the British did do before the war was producing all this irrigation, these big irrigation projects all over the Northwest. At any rate, there was a quarrel about who would get what water that came through the canals that passed through India and through Pakistan. And it took 2 years to solve that. And once they solved that and decided on who would get what share, the dam could go ahead. Until that time, the World Bank was not prepared to pay anything towards the cost of the dam. I may add that the two next dams were not Colombo Plan projects, they were World Bank projects. Next dam was called the Mungla Dam. It was built on the Jhelum River.
Mungla, M-O-N-G-U-L.
Jhelum?
Mungla. How do you
say? Oh, Mungla.
Yes.
I'm giving it the proper pronunciation. It's spelled Mangla, M-A-N-G-L-A, Mangla Dam. Mm-hmm. But there's no a sound in Arabic. It's a, like the U in but. So it's the Mangla Dam. This was an earth-filled. There were two dams actually at Mungla, because you had to close off one end of the valley when the lake came up, and it was called the Jari Dam. So we were building two dams, the Mungla and the Jari. They were earth dams, and of course, I won't go into the details, but they were amongst the biggest dams in the world at that time. Well over a mile long, packed earth, which had been put up by bulldozers and earth-moving equipment, and with rock traces, so the water, rough water, wouldn't wear away the embankments and so on and so forth. And it went on for 6 years. This particular dam, no accommodation had been prepared by the Pakistan government for the builders. When we got there, we had to build our own township first. And it was rather like building a little town that you'll find in in California, like Bakersville or something like that. It was about 6 miles around the perimeter, a wire fence, because it was very necessary because of all the looting that would otherwise go on. And it had everything you would find in any American town, in new town in California or other parts of America. Swimming pools, Olympic size, movies, bowling alleys, restaurants, you name it. All the houses, all of the offices were air-conditioned, which, as it's very hot in the northwest Punjab in the summer, were an absolute boon. But of course, a lot of the work was being done outside. But for those who had to work indoors, everything was air-conditioned. It was, to my mind, a marvelous project to be on. I enjoyed it all the 6 years I was there.
Your family were with you, were they?
No, my wife had her fill with the Warsak Dam, and she said that she was also had interest in London. She had got into the modelling business, and she had been invited to take part in one or two films with well-known actors and actresses, which she did. She had a sort of second part, she said, I don't want to give up this life and go back to living out in the boondocks. Much as I love you, I'd like to stay here. And she put her career, I suppose, in a sense, forward as an excuse for not coming.
How
and
had she managed in the earlier, Dan? You know, how had
she
loved
it.
That? Yes.
Well, she loved it, but...
Did you have your children with you, your two sons, then?
She was my second wife. My two sons were with my first wife, who had left me years before. I got a letter from the lawyer saying that she'd fallen in love with somebody else and blah, 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 and would I release her, and that she was prepared to let me divorce her.
So did you have, were you able to have any social life with the Pathan families, I wonder, while this would be interesting to know what sort of glimpses you had of their lifestyle, if you visited them at all. Did you go to their
homes? The short answer is this, that this job went on 24 hours a day. There were 3 8-hour shifts. There was no time for socializing. People would who were working on the dam out of doors, engineers, at the end of 8 hours, all they wanted to do was get home, have supper, have a drink or two to relax, sleep, and be ready to work the next day. No socializing. Besides, we had built this township out in no man's land. There was nobody to socialize with.
Your wife take to it then?
There was plenty of socializing amongst the wives. Had an international school there. There were upwards of 700 or 800 children there. And they had brought out teachers from America. And the standards were very high. It meant that a child could go back to America, could go to whichever grade he or she was the age for, and go straight in, having lost nothing. It was a wonderful organization. As far as socializing is concerned, we had clubs, we had restaurants, all these things, and people were well paid. We had a very good supermarket. You went to the supermarket and bought your groceries. You could buy anything from champagne to toothpicks. It was quite unbelievable.
Yes, it was such a remote area, wasn't it?
It was all flown in. And a lot of the heavy equipment, which had to come from wherever it was cheapest and also good, a lot of heavy electrical equipment came from Europe. And it would be brought by huge 16-wheeler trailers by road. Right across Iran and Iraq and into northwest Pakistan to where we were. It was stuff that couldn't be flown in and stuff that we couldn't wait for a ship to bring from wherever it was. We'd take weeks or months. So road transport was responsible for bringing it. It was utterly fabulous how the whole thing ran.
Yes. Did you go over the border into Afghanistan? Did your work extend?
The work didn't extend over. We were in tribal territory, which is the buffer between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And however, there was nothing to stop you from going up to Kabul. You could go to Kabul. You could buy an air ticket, for example, to London in Kabul. Pay for it in Russian rubles or something like that, and you could because the exchanges, I never did this myself, I'm a little bit shaky about it, but you can fly to England for half the price by buying it in either rubles or in Afghanis. Nothing to stop you going. Well, the only thing that stopped you from going, except when you were going on leave, was that you couldn't get away from the job. You were working, the construction worker was working 8 hours a day from dawn to dusk, and they were too pooped to do anything else any other time. And we people that are living in the, working in the office were more or less the same. I must just tell you, I touched this without meaning to. Is it working all right still? Okay. To me, as the personnel director on this project, I had a very privileged position. I, of course, was older than a lot of the engineers that were there, and I got on very well with Americans. I'm a very adaptable person. I liked all of them. There was nobody I didn't like. And the project so excited me. There would be times I was full of energy in those days. I would wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I think get in the car, get dressed, get in the car, and I'll go around the project and see what it's like. And it was like going around a fairground. There would be 5 to 6 square miles of work or territory in which huge earth-moving equipment would be moving under searchlights. It was like night turned into day. And I would go around, and I'd see these monster things miles away, looking like little beetles, going up and down, doing this work, which never stopped. It went on the whole time. And there was, to me, a great feeling of excitement watching this going on.
How long did it last in all, the project?
Six years.
To get the third?
It was 6 years.
For the three dams?
No. Oh. 18 years for the three dams.
18. And you were there the whole time, were you?
I was there for the whole time.
Were you? Yes, for the three dams.
No, I was not. The third dam was built by the Italians. And the only reason why I should have said earlier, the only reason why I decided that I would leave McKenzie with a good job with a pension at the end and go on off on this thing was nothing at the end of the job except to find another job. I learned that the construction of these three dams would take roughly 18 years. And I thought, well, that would see me out very nicely if I can get a job in each one of them as they follow consecutively one after the other. It didn't work out quite that way because the next project to me was a disaster in a sense. The Tower Baylor Dam was...
This was the second one or the third?
The Tower Baylor Dam was the third one.
How do you spell that?
Tarbela.
And that was a disaster for you?
Well, to me, I thought it was a disaster. The Italian company that built this dam was a very well-known, very famous engineering company. They had just recently moved some of those famous Egyptian temples in Egypt several miles away from where the floodwaters which otherwise would have covered them. And I'm afraid now I cannot remember the name of the project. But
oh, yes, I know. Up in the Nile Valley, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
And they were very successful in the sense that they always bid lower than everybody else. And, of course, when it's a thing that's out to bids, depending on who the buyer is, of course, the buyer looks into the whole thing. If the thing is too cheap, they're going to say, well, it's not going to work. and they'll pay more to. In this particular case, they so underbid. There were four bidders, four big bidders, world-sized bidders. We were one of them. Impregilo, I-M-P-R-E-G-I-L-O, which was the name of the Italian consortium. Impregilo stood for Imprese Girolo Lodigiani, which was the names of the directors, the first names. We won't bother with that. But Impregilo's bid was millions below ours, and we were the high bidders, but we knew what the rock was like, which was pretty rotten. The Himalayas are new mountains, they're not strong, and you come up against all sorts of extra expenses and costs when building in that kind of terrain. Anyway, Impregilo also had the backing of the Italian government. They always guaranteed their contractor that if they ran into trouble with, said, underbid too much, they would make up the difference to them, which was not really fair. Well, to cut a long story short, they got the project. Well, immediately you saw how shoddy the work was. Instead of having a nice American-type city to live in, the bungalows were built of mud, bricks, and doorways are not straight, windows are not square. You had a room with a door in one wall, in the center of the wall. The door going out to the other side, also in the center of the wall, was never in line. It was shoddy work. Done in a hurry, but also bearing in mind that they had bid very low, and they had no money to spare on
but
the
you nicest. Weren't involved with this.
I was not involved, no. Except that I had to suffer it.
Oh, did you?
I lived in a mud hut myself.
Oh, and you were still working for this Italian company?
Oh, yes. Oh. I should say that as soon as the Mangla project finished, I went to Italy. I went to the head office of Impregilo Via Senato 8 in Milano, and said that I have been the project personnel manager or director on the two previous dams. I know all the Pakistani workers. I've hired them. I know who are the good ones and who are the bad ones. I've had already 16 years on it. And if they'd liked, and I would very much like to go to work for them, would they employ me? Well, they did. But again, they didn't offer me anything like the same kind of money that I'd been getting. But I was kind of caught in a situation now where I had to take what they could offer, because or go find another job altogether, which would, I took the option, I accepted the thing. Well, the Pakistani workers on the Tarbela Dam, were a lot of them men who had fought in North Africa against the Italians, who had no respect for the Italians at all. And this began to show. They would run little strikes and that sort of thing. And I said, it's no good giving in to these people all the time. When you talk to them and say you've got to do this or that, have some teeth in your mouth. Don't suffer it. Well, for peace and quietness and being the sort of people they were on this, they gave in to many absurd and abnormal demands that were made by the workers. And I said, look, if this is the way you don't listen to my advice and you give in to all the demands, I said, I do not want to work for you. And I stayed for them for exactly a year. At the end of that year, I gave my notice. I was justified in what I felt, I think, years later. The other story of putting too much sand in and not enough cement, or that sort of basic thing. They had cavitation in the tunnels they built for the powerhouse. The tunnels collapsed. All sorts of things went wrong. The rock was too soft, and they didn't brace things up enough to all the things we knew from previous experience. The result was that the World Bank paid massive much more money than if they had accepted our most expensive bid. It went on and on. Instead of being a project that would last 6 or 8 years, it was still going on in 12 years' time. They were still making good where things went wrong. And, well, did the Pakistan government worry about that? Not a bit. They were all getting, all the workers from the chief engineer downwards were being paid for working much longer on this project. Steady income from the fact that there was inefficiency and poor work. And they all had jobs for longer than they would have had it been done quickly and properly. But I may sound very prejudiced, and I probably am, but it was something I could, it was so transparent to me and covered up officially that I gave it, threw up my hands.
This is the end of Reel 14 and 15, Gavin Douglas.